This podcast of The Business is a production of KCRW Santa Monica at 89.9 FM, webcast at kcrw.com, and distributed by NPR.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Acura, featuring the all-new turbocharged Acura RDX with available real-time traffic alerts. More at acura.com/RDX.
This podcast is a production of kcrw.com.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner, and this is The Business. This week on The Business, we look at the Great White Way through the lens of a new documentary called Show Business, The Road to Broadway. But first, it's the Hollywood News Caravan. There's no business like The Business from NPR. After the triumph in parenting that is Lindsay Lohan, her mother, Dina Lohan, announced last week that she is in talks with E! Entertainment Television to appear in a reality series called Momager, as in moms who are also managers. It will cover Dina's efforts at getting Lindsay's younger siblings, Allie, 14, and Cody, 11, into show business and, inevitably, into a 12-step program. Let's remember, this is the same woman who didn't bat an eyelash last week when Svedka Vodka agreed to sponsor Lindsay's 21st birthday, even though her troubled daughter just left rehab. In other great programming for women, Lifetime Television's new scripted series, Army Wives, drafted 3.5 million viewers last week, making it the most-watched series premiere in the network's 23-year history. Lifetime's new president, Suzanne Daniels, says it's phase one of a strategy to once again own Sunday night with female audiences. Phase two will launch later this summer with Coast Guard Concubines, followed by the truly regrettable Strictly Platonic Girlfriends of the Merchant Marine. In other TV news, if you refuse to believe the hype that digital TV would make your old set obsolete, you were right. New legislation will make the rabbit ears and rooftop antennas that are still used by 20% of Americans ostensibly useless on February 17th next year. But the feds have also created a cheap loophole. Cheap for you, the consumer, not you, the taxpayer. A digital signal converter for your old TV will cost you $10 after a government rebate. In fact, the feds will spend as much as $80 a household to help families buy converters at a total cost of $1.5 billion. They expect to recoup that cost by later auctioning off a portion of the broadcast spectrum being vacated by analog TV stations. Finally, video game publisher Electronic Arts has hired former Activision president Kathy Vrabic to head a new division called Casual Entertainment that will focus on casual titles. What's a casual title? EA defines it as a video game that will be accessible to non-gamers and easily played with little or no prior knowledge or understanding. We're eagerly looking forward to their first planned casual title, Parallel Parking, which I plan to buy for my wife. And that's the Hollywood News Caravan. Coming up next, Broadway and or bust. This weekend marks the 61st annual Tony Awards, Broadway's highest honors. Named after the turn-of-the-century American actress Antoinette Perry, the Tonys are to the theater what the Oscars are to movies. Well, sort of. Because movies and musicals are very different, and so is the business that churns them out. If you don't have any idea about what goes into a big Broadway musical, may we suggest a new documentary called Show Business, The Road to Broadway.
For those people who love it, people who want to work in the theater, movies don't do it for them. Television doesn't do it for them. They want to be here. They want to be in New York. They want to be in those buildings. There's something magical about going in those buildings. It is like nothing else.
Show Business, The Road to Broadway, follows a year in the life of four new musicals during the 2003 theater season. First, there's The Witches of Oz extravaganza, Wicked. With a $13.5 million budget and broad appeal, it was the closest thing to a blockbuster you'd find on Broadway.
What is this feeling so sudden and new?
Felt the moment I laid eyes on you.
My pulse is rushing.
My head is reeling.
My face is flushing.
What is this feeling? Fervid as a flame. Does it have a name?
On the other end of the spectrum, the lower budget Avenue Q, an edgy, hip, yuppie puppet show that some called Sesame Street for grown-ups.
Right now you are down and out and feeling really crappy.
I'll see.
And when I see how sad you are, it sort of makes me happy. Sorry, Nikki, human nature, nothing I can do. It's Schadenfreude, making me feel glad that I'm not you.
Then there's the much more serious-minded piece of musical theater, Caroline or Change.
Can't afford loose change, can't afford change. Change is a danger for a woman like me, trapped between the devil and the muddy brown sea. I gotta get back to the way that I've been. God, drag me back to that basement again.
The show was written by Angels in America playwright Tony Kushner, based on his childhood in Louisiana and his relationship with his family's black maid. And finally, there's Taboo, a musical autobiography written by and featuring androgynous 80s British pop star Boy George.
Welcome to the world of Taboo, the club that everyone wants to be a part of. Come in, come out. We're in this together, but there's always room for one left.
The show ran successfully in the UK and was mounted in the States by comedian, talk show host, and first-time Broadway producer Rosie O'Donnell. Show Business, The Road to Broadway documents the uphill battle these four fledgling shows had to fight to make it to the stage. The movie was directed by Dori Berenstein, who is also a Broadway movie and TV producer in her own right. Dori Berenstein, welcome to the business.
Thank you very much.
How did you pick these four musicals? Because it seems like they not only all have these sort of incredibly dramatic hurdles to overcome, but they also seem to sort of typify the biosphere of Broadway sort of perfectly in terms of, you know, the there's the sort of highfalutin import, there's the populist popcorn, you know, mega budget blockbuster, there's the serious minded Tony, you know, Kushner special. You know, did that inform your thinking? How did you choose these four?
Well, actually, when I dove into this, the idea was to chronicle a Broadway season, and so I didn't start out focusing just on those four shows because who knew? You know, who knew how the season would unfold? But it's exactly as you say. In the editing room, we really decided that these four shows, there were 37 that season that we chronicled, but these four shows really would tell the story of what it's like to produce a Broadway musical behind the curtain.
Right. You know, they say the movie business is risky. Broadway seems to make the movies look like, you know, U.S. savings bonds. Here's a clip from your film of Broadway theater owner and producer Rocco Landisman.
It's a brutal business. It's a harsh business, and it's the kind of business that unless you love a project or love the show, you're not going to get involved with because the risk-reward, frankly, is terrible.
Let's compare the risks between making a movie and making a show. Ticket prices, advertising, weather. There's a lot that are X factors here. Tell me a little bit about the difference and the risk.
Right at the get-go, the biggest difference is when you make a movie, you know, hopefully it will have a theatrical release and hopefully it will do well. But if it doesn't, you've got DVD, you've got TV, you've got all sorts of ancillary opportunities. When you produce a Broadway show or you produce theater anywhere, you get the show launched, but then there's no DVD. There is no TV run. It's there and then it's gone. And the money that you raise to put on the show only gets you to opening night. You have to then sustain it. You have weekly costs you have to take care of. It's a very expensive proposition.
Of the four musicals you follow, one has a $15 million budget and one has a piddling budget of $3.5 million. Put that in context for us. Explain why that is or isn't relevant, you know, when comparing the risks that each one of these shows face.
Well, risk on Broadway is relative. You know, you could have a show that cost $1 million and it could close on opening night and you've lost $1 million. And you can have a show that's $14 million but takes a couple years to recoup but eventually becomes a big success. So it's hard to gauge success by budget. And the bottom line is that you have a lot of money at risk on any show, a drama, a musical, a revival, and it's usually something that a team of people has worked on for years to get to Broadway.
Budgets for Broadway shows are skyrocketing like movie budgets, and that's changing what makes it to the stage. Tony Kushner's tale of race relations, Caroline or Change, was a wild exception to what normally makes it to Broadway. Here's Tony Award-winning actor Alan Cumming.
Broadway is a business. And just like films and TV, Broadway shows feel the pressure to appeal to the broadest possible audience. And so when a show comes along like Caroline or Change, which doesn't do that, because, you know, it's not a feel-good musical, they're taking a lot of risks. And I really hope that the Broadway audience gives it a chance.
It's not just audiences, it's critics like John Lahr of The New Yorker.
The fact that Carolina Change is coming to Broadway is a freak. It shouldn't really be there. But by the will of almost all the producing community, I mean, in other words, everybody has agreed to lose a little money so that this very good thing, which doesn't fit the commercial formula, can be seen, and I'm all for it.
Critics have always been very important to theater, and movie critics are actually becoming less and less powerful. You hear it all the time that the studios consider a certain film critic-proof, and they don't even bother screening it for critics sometimes. You know, studios often go around them. Are critics still all-powerful on Broadway?
I think critics carry a lot of weight, but in a different way perhaps than they used to do, because now that there's so many outlets for theater criticism with the web and radio and television and cable and print, of course. And so I think that as the movie talks about with Wicked, you know, they overcame mixed reviews to, you know, the audience didn't care. They loved that show, and now it's a global phenomenon. Reviews didn't matter.
You'll be popular, just not quite as popular.
Then you have Wicked this season, which opened again to mixed to critical to negative reviews, and that appears to be making a run for it.
Well, a good one.
Wicked may be the one that overcomes the reviews. You didn't care for it.
No, I didn't.
Lumbering Boar, I think you called it?
Probably. That sounds familiar.
I liked it.
It's lumbering and boring and awful
and overproduced and hard to follow.
Badly directed.
And muddled and messy.
And it's making $1 million a week, so that shows you our influence.
People want to see their money on the stage. I think this is one of the, you know, a lot of the critics said, oh, well, they were just throwing money at the show. Well, people who are spending $105 a ticket want to see that stuff on stage, and they see it in that show.
But I do think where the critics continually make a giant difference on Broadway is that they do bond together sometimes and get around a show that maybe has a very little small advertising budget that people don't know about that much, that is maybe has an esoteric subject matter. It's not pre-promoted in any way. And the audience, through the critics and their raves about this show, they discover it. They're willing to take a chance on it, and they go see it, and then they create giant successes. So they do have that power. And I think Avenue Q is an example of that, because the critics went nuts over Avenue Q, and it helped the audience find that show and turn it into the giant success that it became.
Is it also true that critics can have a sort of transformational effect on a show? That is, you know, part of how Broadway works is you go out of town, you do tryouts, you sort of adjust the recipe, add more sugar, less salt, whatever it is. I mean, is there this sort of symbiosis that occurs when someone starts to write about something even before it's opened? Is it helpful or is it not?
I think it's invaluable. When you take a show out of town, it's all about learning what you've got, because you don't know what you have until you get it up on a stage. It could sound great on paper. It could even sound fabulous in a reading. But until you really have it up there with props and sets and costumes and an audience to tell you whether or not your jokes are working, your scenes are working, whether or not you're making people laugh or cry, you have no idea. And so that out-of-town tryout is crucial. And it's both the response from the critics, and not one critic. It's like, is there a consensus that we're having trouble in our second act, for example? Or, even more so, how is the audience responding? The audience is the most valuable tool that you've got, because the critics come and see an early performance, and then they're gone. And you're running for several weeks, and during that time, you're reworking the show, and you have, in theater, which is very cool, you basically have a captive focus group every single night. And so you can think, oh, we're having trouble with this scene at the top of Act Two. We're going to rework it. Maybe we're going to change the opening number. And then you put it up that night. You change it, and the actors have to learn their lines. You get it up there, and you see whether or not it's working. If it's getting closer but not quite right, you make some more changes and put it up the next night and see how the audience responds. So it's really an ongoing focus group with the audience and with help from the critics to figure out how to make your show better.
To make a show go from good
to very good, it's very easy. It's a series of very bold, smart things that you have to do. But to make a show go from very good to brilliant, it's an endless series of details, an endless series of unbelievable details that lift it.
We're working on the epilogue. This is the 9 millionth version of it. We feel like we're very close to getting it right, but we're still struggling with it. It's gone from being a two-character scene to a one-person song.
That was Caroline or Change author and lyricist Tony Kushner and composer Janine Tesori. Before that, you heard the show's director George C. Wolfe. All this work leads up to each show's black tie, high-stress, celebrity-studded opening night. But not everyone can handle it, like Wicked composer and lyricist Stephen Schwartz.
I don't go to opening night. I'm too hysterical. And I will not be going to the opening night of Wicked. I will be in Vermont.
Those are clips from the new documentary Show Business, The Road to Broadway. We're talking with the film's director, Dori Berenstein. I want to ask you sort of the importance of that opening night or that opening weekend, if there is, if that's the standard by which we start looking at a show. When a musical opens, how important is opening night? How important is opening weekend? The numbers?
Opening night and opening weekend is not necessarily indicative of much. Theater is very different in that it needs, oftentimes, it needs time to evolve. It needs time to find its audience. You need to get that buzz going. You know, sometimes you have a show that has a major star. It's pre-promoted. Everybody's going to want to come see that show. It has a great advance. And everyone's going to flock to it. If it's a great show, that's going to continue. And you're going to have people coming forever to that show. But as great as it is, if it's not terrific, you know, that audience is going to go away and that show could close in just a matter of weeks. So there, I've done shows that have had a big turnaround suddenly on opening night because of the reviews. You know, when you had I did a show called Full Moon with Bill Irwin and David Shiner, and it was a polite applause during previews, 50% capacity. And then on opening night, we got this amazing review from Frank Rich at the New York Times. And the next night, same show, standing ovation, packed houses, you couldn't get a ticket. And so, you know, you just that show did change on opening night. That was a huge difference. But other shows, you know, for example, Spring Awakening that's on Broadway right now has been very slow to start, but it's just picked up steam as it's gone on because of the critical response, the Tony nominations, and now it's doing so much better. But that was a slow build. Every show's different.
Speaking of the Tonys, the Oscars mean big business for certain kinds of movies, right? What role did the Tonys play for Broadway? And can they save a show?
The Tonys mean a great deal to the community. And it's just the fabulous way for the community to honor its own. And it's such a great time in the theater community where the whole community comes together and there are a million different events around the Tony Awards. As far as saving a show, as we talk about in the film, there seems to be only one Tony that really does make a difference to the box office sometimes, and that's Best Musical. It can take a show that's doing okay and just send it through the roof. But those that don't win it certainly aren't hurt by not winning it.
At the actual awards ceremony itself, the night leads up to Best Musical. You could kind of say the same thing about the season. The season is leading up to Best Musical.
That's theater publicist Chris Bono in the new documentary Show Business, The Road to Broadway. On the occasion of the 61st Annual Tony Awards, we're talking with the film's director, Dori Berenstein, about the risky business of producing Broadway musicals. We'll have more after a break. You're listening to The Business from NPR.
Yeah!
You're listening to The Business, and I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. This weekend marks the 61st annual Tony Awards. We're looking at the business of Broadway musicals through the lens of a new documentary called Show Business, The Road to Broadway. The film follows a year in the life of four new musicals during the 2003 theater season, from their earliest rehearsals to the Tony Awards. There's Wicked, the $13 million Witches of Oz extravaganza, the smaller and edgier yuppie puppet show Avenue Q, and Tony Kushner's serious-minded Caroline or Change. Last, but not least, is Taboo, an autobiographical show written by and featuring androgynous 80s British pop star Boy George.
You've got it wrong. You've got it right. You've got a lot to learn. Oh, you're so nervous and so uptight. I think I like it. Oh, I think I love it.
Comedian and talk show host Rosie O'Donnell happened upon Taboo during its successful run in London's West End. A diehard fan and promoter of musicals, she decided to invest $10 million of her own money to bring it to Broadway. But while the show was prepping to open, Rosie was embroiled in a lawsuit over ownership of her magazine. As a result, the behind-the-scenes travails of Taboo were subjected to unusual media scrutiny, especially from New York Post theater columnist Michael Riedel.
Taboo's the fun one. I mean, you know, Taboo's a circus. We have Boy George writing you letters, Rosie O'Donnell spending the day in court. Is she going to fire the director? Is she not going to fire the director? Changes, you know, it changes every hour.
Taboo closed after only 100 performances, and Rosie allegedly lost her entire $10 million investment. We're talking about this and all things Broadway with Dori Berenstein, the director of a new documentary called Show Business, The Road to Broadway.
I want to talk about the R factor, Rosie O'Donnell. It seems like, you know, what Oprah is to the book business, Rosie O'Donnell is to Broadway. Is she sort of helpful to Broadway? Has she, you know, become a liability to Broadway, or something of a mix of the two?
I think she's been spectacular for Broadway. She has worked so hard for so long to get incredible exposure for Broadway shows that might not otherwise get it. And that kind of exposure on television, particularly with her show, with The View, has really helped a lot of shows in a significant way. And then one of the shows that we chronicle in the film is her show, Taboo, which had a rough road. But what she did is put her own money, $10 million, on the line for a project she believed in and was deeply passionate about. And that just doesn't happen anymore, you know, to put your own money on the line like that. So she has
It's kind of show business 101 is don't spend your own money.
Yeah, but she did. And it's her passion and commitment to the art form, which, you know, is incredible. It's only wonderful what she's done.
But for Taboo, the show that she produced and invested all this money in, it seemed like, at least from having watched your film, that part of its problem was that it was a Rosie O'Donnell production, and that she was involved in a very nasty fight with her magazine publisher and was getting all kinds of press, and it sort of brought this media glare on something that maybe it didn't need.
I think that's absolutely true. The show was being maligned in the press before it even had a first preview. So it and as Raul Esparza, who is one of the stars of Taboo, but now the leading man in Company, Tony Award nominated show, an actor, and he talks about having to work in a fishbowl during that time. And so I think that her court case and the fact that she was in the center of a media storm really hurt that show. And, you know, if it had been mounted at a different time, that show might have had a different life.
There's a sense that people on Broadway want to do this for the love of it, and that they don't necessarily have aspirations to be TV stars or movie stars. Is that true? I mean, is there a certain kind of strictly Broadway actor, and can you make a life that way?
Well, I think that there are a lot of amazing performers that launch their career on Broadway, and it really gives them the chops and the credentials to go out and be able to do anything. Because when you think about it, the talent that you've got to have to do a Broadway show 8 times a week. I mean, they're really athletes when you think about it, because they have to be at their peak night after night after night, and they have to do a show like they're doing it for the very first time, because the audience out there has never seen it before. And that really is so different than movie acting. You do a scene, maybe you do 4 takes. It's in the can, and then you don't ever have to think about it again. So it's training, and a lot of talent has gone on to movies, and hopefully they come back to Broadway. But I've done some shows with an extraordinary talent that they were wooed by Hollywood after they made a big splash on Broadway, and they didn't want to leave. They really just want to stay in New York and keep doing theater.
Does that go for producers too?
I think that the majority of Broadway producers are Broadway producers, and that's what they do, and that's who they are. You know, and kind of being in both worlds, I think there's more of an interest in the movie community to come on over and have movie producers take a shot at producing a Broadway show than the other way around.
The odds are against you that you're going to make your money back. I mean, of course, you might have a nice tax write-off, but I really admire and cherish producers, even the monsters among them, and they keep rising up again, you know, like Dracula with a stake in his heart, and that's why you're always hopeful.
That was Ben Brantley, chief theater critic for the New York Times, from the new documentary Show Business, The Road to Broadway. We're talking with the film's director, Dori Berenstein. Tell me a little bit about, you've had your feet in both places, compare and contrast, if you will. What's the chief difference between the two in terms of ego, in terms of money, in terms of hierarchy?
Well, I think that you can definitely draw a comparison between producing a Broadway show and producing an independent movie, because you are involved in every little tiny part of that production from its day of birth, the first time there's an idea of it, all the way through to opening night. But then you have to be there to nurture that show every step of the way throughout its run, and then its road life, and a CD hopefully coming out, and you know, it is very hands on. You don't hand it off to the marketing department. You know, you live and die with this show, and it's kind of the same with independent movies. You know, you have to go out there and raise the money. You have to put the team together. You have to nurture it every step of the way. And that's high risk, because there are plenty of independent movies that are made that never see the light of day. And there are plenty of shows that are trying so hard to get to Broadway that never make it there. So, you know, there is that comparison. You know, I think the difference is that you, with theater, it's a living, breathing thing. And you're dealing with actors who get sick and huge global weather problem that is keeping people from going to the theater. You know, there's so many things that you can't control with live theater. With a film, you know, once you get it in the can and you edit it, it's done, you know, and it's a different kind of management after that.
What do you think would have happened if you'd gone to 4 movie studios and said, I want to follow, you know, your 4 blockbusters to the screen? You think you would have gotten...
Well, I want to ask that question, and I want to go do that. And I don't know the answer that I'm going to get, but I would imagine at a big studio that it's going to be a little harder to pull that off. But I'd love to capture that.
Dori Berenstein is the filmmaker of Show Business, The Road to Broadway, and also the producer of the current Broadway smash, Legally Blonde, the musical. Dori, thanks for being on with us.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
And that's The Business. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Darby Maloney is the associate producer of the program. You can listen to this or any past program online anytime at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can also podcast the show on KCRW's site or through iTunes. Our email address is thebusiness@kcrw.org. The Business is produced by KCRW Santa Monica and distributed by National Public Radio. I'm Claude Brodesser-Ackner. We'll see you next week on The Business.
KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts covering politics, news, music, arts, and culture. For more details, visit kcrw.com.